The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
All right. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, today on January 12, 2003. We've got a live show here in the studio in Campbell Hall in Urbana. And we're going to be talking about the apparent demise of the CU City View, Champaign-Urbana's weekly newspaper that's been in existence for 8 years, roughly. And we're very fortunate to have three guests today on our show. Mike Nezovich, the senior editor at the CU City View, Jenny Southland, the arts and entertainment editor, and Carl Esterbrook, a longtime contributor to the paper, as well as the Green Party candidate for Congress
yes,
in the
indeed.
Last election. We've got half of his voters, I think, in the studio today.
Oh, Carl, no, Bob, that's unfair.
That is unfair. That's quite unfair. I apologize for that, Carl.
But it may be true.
So we're here to talk about the CU City View, which is... been around for quite some time since I moved here and started working here a few years back. And Mike, why don't you just tell us what the story is with the CU City View? What's its status as of today?
Well, it suspended publication on January 2nd, I believe it was. That means that if an interested party came forward, they could still buy it and buy... its assets, the computers, our files, you know, the advertising client list. And in fact, you know, I haven't talked with anybody directly, but I know that the ownership was talking to a couple of interested parties, but nobody could put together what they needed to do fast enough.
Now, who are the current owners or the most recent owners, whichever term applies?
The company's called Saga Communications.
Mm-hmm. And where are they based?
In Michigan. And they also operate three radio stations locally.
And what else do they own? I mean, is this sort of a mid-sized media company? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably to some people they seem like a giant conglomerate, but as far as these things go, they're actually pretty small. Yeah. Mid-sized might even be stretching it. I'm not sure how
many. Regional, more or less?
Yeah, they're across the country, but I think they own maybe 40 stations or something.
Yeah, I mean, Rupert Murdoch wouldn't even bend over to pick that up.
Well, probably not. And there are no Clear Channel communication. And I think Clear Channel, I think, owns 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
They are a chain, but it's not on that order.
And they own a number of these weekly newspapers, or is this one of their few? How does that work?
This was the only. And, you know, I don't want to speak for anybody, but I think I'm confident in understanding that this was sort of an experiment for them, and they thought it might be a good idea to own such a thing in other markets where they also operated radio stations. And I think they imagined doing that and then from the experience with CU City View, looked at it and then looked at a couple of other markets where similar papers have gone out of business. And I think this decision had less to do probably with our particular circumstances and more to do with them saying, well, maybe it wasn't a good idea to try to string together a chain of these things. And if mm-hmm. we don't string together a chain of these things, why would we own just one across the country? So,
Well, let me ask you, Jenny Southland, the longtime A&E editor and the unofficial historian of the CU City View. I mean, you've been on staff since the beginning, is that right?
Yeah, I came in a few months after Paul Young had actually started it. It was a monthly at that time. Mm-hmm. It was called The Optimist, and that was back in 95. It actually opened, I think, December, January 95. Mm-hmm. And I met Paul shortly after that. He had it operating in a back bedroom of his home. He just had some computers set up. He created an actual paper. He was a graphic designer and a superb graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd created ads. And then he took his publication that he'd created out and solicited in the community for advertising and said, look, this is what your ad could look like in our paper. And he and I met, and I actually sold advertising for him for a little while because I'd already lived in the community. I've been here 30-plus years, so I knew a lot of people.
Since grade school.
No. I came here with two children already, so hardly grade school. But I looked at that paper, and it was exciting. Visually, it was just dynamic, and I knew this is wonderful. This is something that I could get behind, and because I could get behind it, I was able to go out and sell it quite easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a difference.
I had a lot of enthusiasm for it. And in the beginning, that's what I did. I sold advertising and did some artwork for him because that's my background. I graduated from U of I with an MFA in painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taught at Illinois State University. So I came in with an art background, and that's probably what attracted me to the paper because it was so visual.
No, one thing that jumps out, the first name was The Optimist,
yes.
Which personally, I must say, sounds like a good name. I like
it. Yeah, it was a good name.
And the most recent name was CU City View,
yes.
Which is at the other end of the spectrum in this,
yes.
Sort of the quality of names for,
yes.
Giving it something identity and personality.
Mm-hmm.
How did we go from, isn't that sort of like heading in the wrong direction? How did we go from The Optimist to CU City View?
Well, The Optimist was actually, Paul had contacted the national organization of the Optimist Club to get permission to use that name, which he did.
Mm.
And the local chapter sued us, and they actually won their suit. And that's when we were forced to change the name from The Optimist. And Paul came up with this, The Octopus, and he did write a column that gave his rationalization. And maybe because it started with an O, it was amusing. It was sort of a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. But it was also, it represented something almost spiritual to him because the octopus, you know, of course, there's ink and, you know, the tentacles, you know, the wide-reaching, mm-hmm. and the intelligence of the creature.
It's not a bad name, is it?
Yeah. But as a sales rep, it was pretty interesting to call your clients that had known you as the Optimist and suddenly say, "Hi, this is Jenny Southland. I'm with the Octopus." And I would burst out laughing every time.
Did anyone consider calling it the Pessimist after that?
No, no. And I think that the community embraced it as the Octopus, but it developed a reputation. It was sort of renegade. It was a little wild. And editorially, it wasn't always as professional in terms of its journalistic integrity as we might like it to be. And the change to CU City View was a strategy, and it was a strategy that I understood. Even
this was from the Saga people when they purchased it?
Yes, absolutely.
And that was about a year ago, is that right?
Yeah. Saga purchased it in August of 2001?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it's almost 18 months.
Yeah. So when they bought it, they made a decision to change the name because they wanted to lose any of the negative baggage that was associated with the name The Octopus, because we were looking at penetrating this sort of third tier, this omnipotent third tier of advertisers, which apparently is more conservative. And
see, I'm lost already. The third tier, this sounds mystical. What are the first?
Well,
is this
the
like
first
a 12-step
tier
program? What are the first two tiers? Yeah.
Well, the first tier of advertisers were the local mom and pop store, you know, Jane Addams Bookstore, Pages for All Ages, people, mm-hmm. that related to the content of the paper, the mission of the paper.
Locally owned small businesses.
Small business, which Paul went out first in his appeals for advertisers. Mm-hmm. And then we started to, you know, move into other levels of advertising. I think we got a lot of support from local bars, anyone that had music, performance arts, because mm-hmm. we covered that so vigorously. We became more legitimate in a sense because we had the park districts and the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, and they gave us a wonderful kind of legitimacy in the community. But then it's that group out there that's a little tougher to penetrate, you know, car dealerships and Provena Covenant, Carl Clinic, all of those.
Octopus might have been a little too sort of flaky.
Too edgy, too on the
goofy.
Fringe. Right.
Yeah.
And we were trying to turn
that. That could be like a bank or something.
Yeah.
Or a car dealer. I could see that.
Well, they wanted to neutralize that. And I think they neutralized the sort of cult of personality that the octopus seemed to represent.
Mm-hmm. Carl Esterbrook also joins us today in the studio. And Carl is a well-known figure, as we said in the introduction, Tom. It's a radio show on WEFT, WEFT. And how long have you been writing for Optimist, Octopus,
City Puss,
as it comes to be called.
Yeah,
yeah. I have to ask Jenny to remember. In fact, Paul Young asked me to write about theater for the then optimist. Oh, I guess it had become the octopus when he first asked me about that, and then about politics. So I did theater reviews and a political column under the octopus name, and I've been turning up at the scratching at the door of the paper ever since, and occasionally they run my stuff.
Yeah, that would have been 96.
Yeah.
So you're a longtime contributor to the paper then, Carl. Mm-hmm. And what's your impression personally as you see this going on? And is this a sad moment for you to see the CU City View?
Oh, yeah. It's a sad moment. I mean, in fact, there have been a series of sad moments for Paul's original vision, I think, including its acquisition by Saga Communications, which, by the way, I understand has a reputation for being a fairly hot media stock in a down market. I mean, so when they came in and bought it, one of the things that was said was that, well, this says something about where media corporations of this sort are going because these guys are cutting edge of this business. You know, well, it didn't seem good to me at all. I think it's a sad moment to see the disappearance of a cultural political weekly in Champaign-Urbana is something is very nice to have. I mean, I regret its passing. I hope there will be something that will take its place.
Or maybe it can be resurrected.
Possibly.
Let's go to the phone lines. We have lines open, and our numbers here at the station for Media Matters are 333-9455, our local number, our toll-free number, 800-222-9455. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Today we're talking about the CU City View and its apparent demise. We have in the studio with us Mike Nezovich, the senior editor at the CU City View, Jenny Southland, the A&E Arts and Entertainment editor at the CU City View, and Carl Esterbrook, longtime contributor to the paper. And I must say, this show, I should let our listeners know and our guests, was actually recommended by one of our listeners just a few days ago. And just to show, we get a lot of our ideas for shows from our listeners, and this was one of them. And I've heard a lot of people asking me about it just in the last day or two when they announced it over the air on WILL. And we got, this show set our record. We've done about 40 shows now. The fastest phone call in. We had a phone call before the theme music was off. Line one was taken, and we told them they'd have to be patient. And let's go to line one now. Champagne, you're on the air with staff members from CU City View.
You know, I've been reading The Octopus or The Optimist since it came out. We used to wait every month for it to come out because it was such a treat. And we were lucky when it got to be a weekly. My question is actually for Carl Esterbrook. What is your job?
I live entirely on handouts from the arts and entertainment editor of the paper.
Aren't you a visiting professor?
I'm a visiting professor.
And you've been here for a while, right?
I'm the man who came to dinner. Longest visit on record, yes. You have to understand, visiting is an academic term, which means basically we have no responsibility for you.
And you get paid less.
Thanks, Bob. It's true.
And where did you come from?
Are you putting this in his file? I mean, what's it? Yeah.
I'm tempted to quote Randall Jarrell, out of my mother's womb I fell into the state. Where did I come from? I lived in Boston for a long time before I came here.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Carl, let's give a little more beef there to this. This might be a potential voter in the next race.
And I can't afford to send any of them away.
Yeah, that's right. What do you teach? What are you a professor of?
My degree is in history. I teach, actually, my PhD is in history of Christian thought. So I've taught history and theology and sociology, social theory, basically.
And what's your favorite class to teach? I mean, if someone said, Carl Esterbrook, you can teach any class you want, what would you teach?
Theology. I taught for the religious studies department when I first came here, and I think of the three departments of which I have been a member at the University of Illinois, religious studies was my favorite.
And what is it? I mean, what part of religious studies that most interests you that you like to teach about? I mean, that's a pretty big area.
Yeah, no, it's, well, that's why I ended up in sociology, for one thing, because it's sort of theology and social theory, theology and society, religion and politics.
Mm-hmm.
That's the area that, you know, my research area, as they say.
And it's also part of your personal makeup, would
sure.
you say?
Certainly part interested of in, yeah.
Yeah.
All scholarship is autobiography, as a friend of mine says, Bob. Something you should think about.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to go look in the mirror after the
That's
show.
Right. Yeah.
All right, so we have the other caller. Do you have any more comments you have? Or?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've read Carl Esterbrook's comment, like his columns, and I've listened to his radio show, and I can't think of anything more pompous in the entire world of journalism. I mean, I assume he has chased more readers away from that newspaper than anybody.
I think it's not a voter, Bob.
The thing is, like, if you're trying to get a mass market appeal with something like the Octopus, I mean, even survived to do the job it did. I mean, mouthing Noam Chomsky page after page is not going to get it done.
Well, it seems to get it done for Noam. I mean, he happens to be one of the most popular figures around on these issues. I mean, he filled St. Paul's Cathedral in London the other day. I mean, you know, how many people talking about politics, you know, has the sort of international draw that someone like Chomsky does? I'm very happy to quote Chomsky as frequently as I can.
Well, you know, actually, let's turn this over to Mike and Jenny. Do you get complaints about Carl's column? Was that an issue that you faced?
All the time, yeah,
from the scholar.
I assume. The first complaints came from Mike, if I remember correctly.
No, well, I wrote letters as a reader about, mm-hmm. but I mean, I think we could disagree honestly about things. The other thing about it is we've never had a weekly columnist, and so even the people that Carl drives crazy only had to put up with him every other week, you know. And I think he says things that you know, need to be said. But one of the things that we always wrestled with was trying to find a nice balance between one of my frustrations, and I think our frustrations was I think there was a place for Carl, and there was a place for Jerry Landay, who wrote regularly, mm-hmm. and for people who wrote about things that affect us, even though they're not strictly speaking local. You know, they're federal issues, they're the national elections. We were always trying to balance that against strictly local things, the school board, you know. The local elections, there's no mayoral candidate running against Mayor Schweihart, for example. And that's sort of odd. But mm-hmm. I think one of the things we wrestled with was that we couldn't get someone to write about local politics in the way that and as well as Jerry and Carl have written about national things. On the other hand, yeah, people complained about Carl a lot. A lot of people liked him.
I mean,
we're really loyal, mm-hmm. and it was always good for letters.
Yeah, I always said, I said at one point to one of your predecessors, I wanted to be paid twice, Mike. First of all, for my column, and then for filling up the letters column as well.
Yeah, Jenny, did you?
Well, I'll tell you, I was really proud of Carl Estabrook because I think he was ahead of the curve when it came to all the media blitz after September 11. And long before the media began to question our role in this, our responsibility in it, Carl was out there. Carl has great courage, and that's what you need.
Yeah, you know, one thing, I used to be a magazine publisher before I was an academic, and I published a weekly newspaper in Seattle and then a monthly music magazine. And the business model for the monthly music magazine was similar to the CU City View Octopus Optimist, in that it was free. And I think that sometimes people don't understand that when you give a magazine away for free, that people will read it even if they don't read every article in it. I mean, they might only read one thing in it. And so if you carry something that someone doesn't like, it doesn't mean that, well, therefore I'm going to boycott the entire show. If it's free, they'll pick it up if there's anything of value in it, and they'll read what they want to read. So carrying, I would think, a Carl Estabrook or carrying William Crystal or whoever you might carry wouldn't turn someone off from reading the balance of the publication.
That's what I thought. I also think that enough people need to find something that makes them feel like the paper belongs to them, you know, just some corner of it. We had a lot of readers. I mean, actually, one of the most disappointing things about this is all the signs were pointing up. We weren't there yet, but we had gone from about 15,000 to 20,000 papers.
20,000 circulation?
Distributed. And then if you do that whole, you know, like pass-through
41
thing,
readers right. per paragraph or whatever.
But, you know, the weekly people really do pass it around.
No,
and they keep it for the...
You know, that's really extraordinary penetration for a community of this size. 20,000 publication. And what's the population of the region?
About 100,000. Well, the region for the county is 170,
for
but
the distribution
Champaign,
region.
Yeah, really 100,000.
So that's a serious penetration of a news medium or a medium.
And I think one of the things, I agree wholeheartedly with you. I didn't think that any one person could make or break it, and I thought that having a mix was a good thing. But also, we've talked about this. This is a funny community. It's not that big, and also I hazard to say it's conservative, not only, not necessarily even politically, but from a cautious point of being cautious, and the business community is very cautious. And even though this thing had been around in one form or another for 8 or 9 years, the idea of doing anything differently was a really hard thing to get certain advertisers to do, even though it would, in some cases it was a perfect media buy for them in that term, you know, I mean, but they had always done it some other way. They'd always been in another publication.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty competitive marketplace for those advertising dollars when you consider you have an established daily and then an established campus entity.
Mm-hmm. And you've got radio and television.
Right. And not that many people. But you figure if 20,000 people are picking it up, if I was had a business, and I'm not just talking about just a yoga business or something,
yeah,
but selling shoes or checking accounts, I would have wanted to be in there.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question, Jenny? You've been around the longest, and maybe Mike or Carl can chip in and help answer it. I assume there have been a downturn of sorts that has to account for to some extent. Had it been a successful business entity of some sorts, at least breaking even or slightly better for a while, and now was losing money? Or is it more or less the same, but the owners had just sort of abandoned ship? I mean, what's the business status?
It's always struggled. When Paul owned the paper, he was putting a lot of money out of his own pocket to keep it going. He was forced to sell the paper, and he sold it to a company called Yes Communications, New Voice, or Yes Communications.
That's another great name.
Yeah. I mean, in order not to lose it entirely, at one point when Paul was when he knew he had to bail, he had to get out of the paper, or he was, you know, could possibly go bankrupt himself, he had offered it to several of us that, you know, were working for him. He said, "You're the heart and soul of the paper. Mm-hmm. I'll give you the software." He said, "If I can't sell it." And then these buyers stepped up, and they purchased it. And they moved us. We were in a space above Brian Knox Jewelry Store in downtown Champaign, and our rent was maybe $300 a month. And again, this was a corporate decision. They wanted to change our profile. They wanted to create a new image for the paper. So they moved us, you know, into an office space right in the heart of downtown Champaign. So we had a lot more visibility. It was, you know, a lot classier. We were in a sort of,
you know, nice offices. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were in a curious little space. It had its own kind of mystique, but we were really out of the way and not very visible. So there were strategies all around to try to improve the visibility of the paper and transform its image.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters today on WILL AM 580 out of Urbana, Illinois. Today we're talking live in our Campbell Hall studios with employees and freelance writers for the CU City View, formerly the Optimist and the Octopus, which regrettably we hate to say has discontinued publication. We hope only temporarily, but perhaps permanently. In the studio with us, Mike Nezovich, the senior editor at the CU City View, Jenny Southland, who you just heard, the arts and entertainment editor, and Carl Estabrook, a longtime contributor to the paper. We have a full bank of listeners who've called, and I want to apologize to someone who actually dropped off because they got tired of waiting. We're going to get to all our phone calls now. If you want to call in, the number here is 333-9455. Our toll-free number in that line is now open, 800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines now. Mansfield, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you to whoever chooses the columnists that were in the papers. I really appreciated them. That's probably the main part of the reason that I read the papers. The last caller has got some perfectly uncontroversial material that he could read in the News Gazette if he chose to fork out a little money. But my main question is, why can't we pay money for an Octopus or Optimist? And I'll listen offline.
Thank you. No, that's an excellent question. It's a business model. You're printing up 20,000 copies for free, and then all the revenue comes from advertising. What would happen if you charged 50 cents a copy or something? You know, could that, or whatever figure it would be, is there a way you could have a business model that would work charging for it, do you think? Is that someone given thought to that? Is that one of the discussions that has been kicked around? Mike, you want to start?
Well, I've thought about it. It would probably be worth a try. Actually, it would be nice if people never got used to reading what they read essentially for free, because even a daily at a quarter, or a 50 cents, I mean, people have been used to reading journalism of all types for what they think is nothing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an odd thing because you have sort of a three-headed monster there. You know, it's not a direct relationship with the reader. But beyond that, to be honest, I never, I think it's partly just hidebound thinking to some extent. The weeklies that have established weeklies, this is their model. And I never have studied it. I think what happens is you usually incur a significant amount of cost when you decide to go that way in terms of collections, boxes.
Actually, as a business person, I weighed that very heavily because I had a weekly that you had to pay for, and then I went to a monthly that was a freebie. And I think the reason why the freebie model has held ground everywhere and the pay-for model hasn't is that the reason it probably was done here, which is the cost of putting together a distribution network and collecting money, is fairly high. It's a lot easier to just distribute 50 copies to the local market. And then you lose a lot of readers. Your circulation drops. Instead of being 20,000, it'll drop down to 1,500 or 2,000. And then your advertising revenues are going to plummet. So the sort of television commercial broadcast model of that being ad-supported with wide circulation makes a lot more sense. Plus, for morale, for your writers who aren't getting paid a lot, mm-hmm. The idea that 20,000 copies and 100,000 people are reading it gets you more juiced up to work for minimum wage than than if you know that 800 people are reading
Just
it.
Just ask Carl.
This is absolutely true.
So I think, actually, unfortunately, the pay-for model, there's not evidence that would work. And the smaller the market, the less evidence there is that such a model can work. But the dilemma then faces with advertising, because the advertising market isn't that large here.
Right. We never had experienced sales reps either, because there was a constant turnover. We've had three owners, and
that is something that's true at every paper like this in human history.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you get some hot shot from Madison Avenue and Mark says, "Hey, I want to sell ads for the CUCD."
Well, when you have a small staff too, and you have people come in, of course, it was dramatic and shocking when Yes Communications bought the paper and then fired Paul Young. Or, well, they didn't fire him. I guess I don't know what terms.
Put him in charge of weightlifting or something?
Well, he was publisher under their ownership, but then he left the paper. And they brought in a young editor from the Illinois Times, which was another paper they owned, Jeff Ignatius. And again, not long after that, maybe 18 months, they came in and it was pretty draconian. You know, they told these two guys, the publisher / editor, and the marketing director that they'd hired from Kansas City, pack your things. And they had to leave that very day. So when you have an office of, say, eight people, and that happens, it's dramatic. It shakes everybody up. And then you keep getting this turnover because people lose confidence. And I think that I witnessed that a lot.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phone lines. We have a couple of people who've been very patient. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air. Please go ahead.
Yeah, actually, my question was partly the same as the previous callers about the paper being free. And so I guess I'll just ask my other part, which was, so if you have a newspaper that has a liberal point of view and it's actually funded, 100% through corporate advertising, what effect does that have on the newspaper?
Well,
Mike, go ahead.
It's pretty hard to measure.
Do you have advertisers who were saying it was the experience that they're saying, we like the idea of the paper, we like your audience, but we're really uncomfortable with some of your editorial stuff. Is that a problem you faced?
People said that, but it wasn't always along the lines that you might expect. It often, and it's not just sort of like a big corporate thing. It might be a mom and pop business that read an article or a column, and it could have been, there was an article, I think, about downtown Urbana 3 years ago, and there's somebody that for whom this really burned. And then others, it was a cartoon. I think it was This Modern World. I can't remember, and it was George Bush, and there was an expletive, I think, like we're blanked. and that was enough mm-hmm. for them. But it wasn't always political. It was just we managed to, you know, and I think that everybody that has a, puts out a publication faces this. And I don't know if it's strictly speaking liberal conservative. It's a tough question.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, Carl, did you want to
I just want to say I had an argument with one of your predecessors, Mike, about this, in that we would get letters objecting to things that were said in columns and whatnot, and I kept saying, well, look, let the columnists answer the letters. I'd love to write answers to these letters that come in. And your, as I say, your predecessor and editorial chair said, no, we want enough controversy so that people pick up the paper, but not so much controversy that people put down the paper.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So no answer. No answers to letters.
We've got a full bank of callers that I want to get to in a second, but Jenny, do you want to add something
first? Well, we had things that, well, at one point we took on as a revenue page, you know, they called them the sex ads. We ultimately let that go, but the community was sort of up in arms in that. A lot of the community was, and we had an open dialogue.
That you let them go or that you had them?
Eventually we let them go, and of course when we let them go, there were other people that were disappointed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's
tough to balance. You know, before we go back to the lines, one thought that occurs to me, business-wise, given the fact that this is a venture that's never going to be especially lucrative. I mean, you just look at the numbers. You just don't see the revenues there to see someone making a fortune on this. And obviously the really intelligent people at Saga have made that determination as well. Mm-hmm. So that sort of settles it if they're the Wall Street whizzes.
Yeah.
It strikes me that this might be the sort of business where you can't have separate owners from people who run the business. It's so small. The only way it successfully can survive is if the staff itself is the owner as well, because mm-hmm. There's not enough revenue generated to support a separate class of owners and the workers.
I would agree. And I actually had a couple of people when it was for sale, but when Saga bought it, that were interested in putting their money in. Thankfully, it was their money. And we were looking at it. Really, in fairness to Saga, they bought it when no one else locally managed to put – and this has happened twice.
Yeah.
That no one locally managed to come up with what they wanted to keep this particular entity going. But I think that if anything, you put your finger on it. It has to be sort of a shoestring operation. It's always going to be at least a little funky. And if anything, they were a lot more generous, for example, in terms of how many staff and what they paid than we had run through these numbers. And it was like...
So you don't have any great bad blood toward the Saga Corporation necessarily?
No, I wish that we would have had... Once they made this decision, I understood. I wish we had more time to try to find... a buyer, because I think Jenny and I just felt like a lot of things were going right.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines, because we have some very patient people, including line 3. You're on the air from Champaign County.
Hi, I'd love to join the colloquy, but I guess I'll just raise my two issues and listen off the air. I wanted to have some general remarks about the economic climate and whether that has any general influence overall. But I've also noticed that in Chicago there are two free weeklies now being distributed by the majors. The Tribune and the Sun-Times both have a free weekly. I note that I guess Yes Communication has sold the Illinois Times back to the original founder.
That's correct
on that. But just some general comments on that. But I also have to ask, because if you were to look at this like 20 years later and see the last issue. With the article on the FCC, and you knew that it was a company that owned 60 radio stations, and here there is an article about the conglomeration of media. You know, one would think, well, I wonder if this had anything to do with it. And I don't think one would know everything. All decisions are multi-determined, but it seems like maybe this might have been a tipping point or something to do with pushing the coup de grace, the proverbial straw, whatever metaphor you want to use, but some speculation on the latter, and maybe
I can interject, that's an excellent point. The last issue you published, the cover story was on the prospective deregulation of media ownership the Federal Communications Commission is now entertaining, which would allow the parent company Saga to either purchase a lot more stuff than they currently can, or be sold to big companies that currently can't buy them. And make the shareholders in Saga much richer. So I think the caller suggesting did the Saga Company maybe not look too fondly upon this last issue?
You know, I'll never know. I know that the, I know that the decision was made before this.
Yeah.
I mean, even when we, if we weren't aware of it.
Whose decision was it to do that as the cover story in the last issue?
Well, it was made before it was known. It was. I'd love to be that good.
No, I was going to say it's
interesting. And to have sort of taken that, you know, smart a parting shot or something, but.
It's just purely coincidence.
Because we had been through the holiday period, which is kind of hellish for us to try to get the papers out, and we were more open to like stuff written outside of town, alternate stories, and this was a good one. And I'd had a, had a conversation with Mick Wolf at Weft, and I said, "That's a good one."
Yeah, Carl, did you want to add to that?
I just wanted to say that I thought that the caller also makes an excellent point that the major papers in Chicago have started weeklies recently, suggesting that there is certainly a clientele for that. And the idea of a cultural political weekly seems to me to be something that remains viable regardless of the corporate manipulations of something like Saga.
Yeah, in fact, I would go so far as to say from what I know of the market that it remains very viable, and if anything, its prospects have improved, which is why companies like the Tribune and the Sun-Times are moving into the area.
I just might add that those are actually five-day-a-week publications.
Oh, they are.
Yeah, they're out Monday through Friday. But it's the same idea, and it's all for them, it's all about a more youthful readership, which is something that dailies are struggling with.
They're sort of dumbing down publications, too, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't approach the quality of, or at least in my opinion, like the Reader or something.
Yeah, it's sort of like grunting sort of journalism.
Yeah, and I think right now in this community, because I'm involved in the new 40 North Arts Council, and I know that there's been a lot of dialogue about, you know, this whole Richard Florida and the, you know, creative class and how that brings business to communities, and our paper certainly reflected that. I mean, we were vigorous in our arts coverage. If you wanted to know anything about music or theater, you could pick up our paper.
It's going to be a big loss now.
It'll be a huge loss. Yeah, and it's absolutely a shame because we were literally on the cutting edge of all of that. And there was a wonderful dynamic. And of course, the Arts Council will continue, and I'll continue my work with it. But the paper creates this vacuum. And
Well, let me say that you're listening to Media Matters today on WILL. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're talking about the demise of the CU City View, formerly the Octopus and the Optimist. My guest in the studio with me in Campbell Hall, Jenny Southland, who you just heard, the arts and entertainment editor, Mike Nesevich, who you've also been listening to, the senior editor, and Carl Esterbrook, longtime contributor to paper and a radio show host himself on WEFT. Your show is Saturday mornings, 10 to 11 and 12 to 1. Is that right, Carl?
An hour on politics, an hour on poetry.
And then you do the graveyard shift a couple nights a week now?
For the moment, for my sins, I'm doing 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday at WEFT, too.
Okay. And we have a full bank of phone lines, and I'm going to get to all the callers in a second. But first, I want to say one thing, which is we have a weekly mailing list here for Media Matters. We'll send you an email with alerts on who our upcoming guests will be. Plus, we'll give you a way to write us with suggestions for shows. A lot of our shows come from listener suggestions, including the program you're listening to today. If you're interested in getting this weekly email list of who our upcoming shows are, with links to their books and articles and other ways to contact the guests, the way to do it is to go to my website, robertmcchesney.com, and there'll be a, right on the homepage there, there'll be a place to link, and you get right on. You get a weekly list. You can get off the weekly email list at any time you want. We won't use it for commercial purposes. You have our word of honor. But it's been a nice mechanism for us to communicate with and stay in touch with our listeners. So keep that in mind. Our upcoming shows, I might add, for those of you not on our email list, next week, we're going to have Norman Solomon on, a return visit from Norman, who just came back from spending time in Iraq with Sean Penn. He's going to be talking about that experience and talking about Iraq and the perspective of war there. On January 26th, our guest will be Laura Flanders, the journalist and media critic and radio talk show host, will be joining us. February 2nd, our guest will be Mark Cooper, the Nation correspondent, who will just return from Brazil, where he will have been covering the World Social Forum. We'll get his feedback on that. And then on February 9th, our guest will be Eric Alterman, a columnist for The Nation, whose new book, What Liberal Media, is just coming out, taking on the notion that we have a liberal news media. So those are our next four shows here on Media Matters. Now let's go back to the phone lines, and let's start with line one. Line one, Urbana, you're on the air.
Yeah. Now, the Madison-Wisconsin Isthmus is doing quite well, but of course it's gone so completely corporate that it really no longer reflects the culture of the people. If our paper has gone into the garbage can, then maybe the Independent Media Center can take this up and we'll mimeograph a local paper and we'll do it just fine. But I think this really represents what's really happening as far as our culture is concerned. Corporate versus the people or civic. And Carl, you can take this one up here. I'll let you go, Charles.
I think all of you can take it if you want. Carl, what would you say to that?
I think that's right. I mean, the history here is pretty clear. The so-called underground papers that emerged in the 60s did start on a shoestring. And, I thought the typical example was the Boston paper. I lived in Boston at the
Phoenix.
Time. The Phoenix, which was bought out by corporate interests, and people were so astonished that and so appalled by this that another group came along and established a paper which they called with editorial brilliance, the new paper. The new paper then did very well indeed and was bought by a Rockefeller. So, I mean, the model was pretty clear. I mean, the corporatization that the caller is talking about. Mm-hmm. I do know the Independent Media Center, which is an important aspect of local media, as these independent media centers are around literally around the world, has thought about expanding their own monthly, The Public Eye. Part of their problem is, though, they're committed to a not only a nonprofit but a non-paid, a volunteer operation.
Yeah.
And at that level, they are not going to be in the position to do a monthly paper on the business model you were talking about.
I mean, you can't really have journalists covering stories if they're not getting paid. Eventually, your quality is just going to suffer. I mean, if you have people who have a lot of free time and trust funds, you might get some great stories.
Right.
But otherwise, it's just not going to be a very effective model for producing high-quality journalism. You can do some good stuff. But also that model, if I understand it, the nonprofit model, you're going to lose advertising too. Even if you pay your staff, it really depends then on getting contributions from, like, the WEFT model then, mm-hmm. or the WILL model, mm-hmm. getting your listeners, or in this case readers, to make donations, which is a way to think about it perhaps. Maybe that's what the Public Eye will be able to generate enough funds that way. But it's a big jump going from a monthly volunteer operation to a weekly that's actually covering arts and entertainment, covering local news. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a qualitative leap.
Well, and that's what
that's
what happened with Paul Young, because he started as a monthly and he made this leap to becoming a weekly, and he had to pay staff and the overhead increased and the revenues were not coming in to meet that overhead. It was very complex. And I've not known many people that had as amazing PR skills as Paul Young did.
Mm-hmm.
He was just superb at that. And we couldn't make it a go. And so I've been through these various ownerships and had sort of hoped that because a corporation is in the business of making money, that they might actually have strategies that would get us over that hurdle. And it still was not effective.
Mike Nezovic, senior editor of CU City View. I mean, I don't want to put you in the spot to give a number on the air, but I mean, what sort of, if someone's listening to this show and said, well, I really want CU City View, what can I do to help? And I happen to have some money. I mean, we're talking five figures, six figures. What sort of range? Two figures? I mean, figure?
Let me just say not much. And probably it's more doable than you think. What you need to think about is, can you commit to the next 6 months?
Why would anybody want to buy the City View in any place? I mean, I know nothing about the economics of this. My entire economic connection with the City View is cashing the princely checks they used to send me, you know. But still in all, if you wanted to start a weekly paper in Champaign-Urbana, seems to me a very good idea. If you want to do that, why would you want to talk to the City View or to Saga Communications?
I mean, the assets simply are of that little value. You just call you up personally to start something and forget City View. You certainly don't want the name.
they might want some of the assets, including the computers and the client lists, and
you probably get them pretty cheap because what value do they have otherwise?
Right, and I think everybody would feel better if it went on, but I think it has as much to do with a plan and a long term commitment to it as anything else.
Yeah, I think that's.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines. This is a, we could go on for hours. I think we had a full bank of callers yet again, although our toll-free number for out of the area is open for those who have been reading the City View from afar. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, real quick. You know, people have been talking about the public eye taking over, kind of filling in the void. However, you know, people got to realize that the Indy Media Center doesn't have enough money coming in to make sure that we can pay rent for the next 3 months, no less expand its, you know, the cost it takes to expand the publication of the public eye. So, you know, I think we all need to keep in mind that, you know, even things like the Indy Media Center don't operate for free, and we really need more contribution. My main question, though, was I've heard in the buzz that La Bamba sued the Octopus years ago, and that this, they lost the suit, and the settlement was quite costly. So my question is, how much of that was a contributor to the eventual downfall of the Octopus, and therefore should I continue my personal boycott of La Bamba? Listen.
All right.
That was a factor. We were sued. We did a piece of editorial. It was simply a transcription of some of the comments made by employees. I mean, in terms of its journalism...
At La Bamba.
Mm-hmm. In terms of its journalism, it lacked a fair representation of both sides. We were sued. Yes, communications, you know, had to grapple with that as part of debt, but that it was not... I would not say that that was any more significant than the lack of revenue coming in from advertising sales, or it was just one piece of the puzzle.
And the paper never contested the suit to the extent that it should have, right, Jenny? I mean, they simply rolled over when the advertiser called up and said, we're suing you. They settled right away, right?
Yeah, they settled pretty quickly.
I think they had a much better case, by the way, and I know nothing about it.
All right, well, let's go back to the phone lines if we can. Line 3, Urbana, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to record my deep disappointment about the demise of the CU City View. I've looked forward to it as a relief from the right-wing inanities that are purveyed by the commercial press here in Illinois. And I was hopeful that those of us who are interested in the survival of a different point of view might go ahead and get behind the public eye and the independent media center and hope that that might be expanded and fill the void that has now been formed. I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Okay. Mike?
You've already talked about this, but I think this is like a lot of things, and I'm going to just say it's harder than it looks. And, you know, I certainly learned that over the last year and a half or so. And it is really a lot of work, and if you want to do a reasonably good job and just even watching city council meetings on cable, which is a time saver as opposed to going to the things, which you sort of need to do, you need to pay people to do that.
Yeah.
And this, I think that they do a great thing. You don't know how much they do to voluntarily get it out on a monthly basis.
The public eye.
Yeah. And I would say is whatever happens, whether City View rose from the ashes or somebody else starts another paper, I think everybody, this community needs to look itself in the eye and say, look, if I know somebody's got a business, harp on them to advertise in it.
Yeah.
You might not like the model, but it's what we got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And pick it up. Talk it up. You know, we've heard a lot of good things about the paper since this announcement was made, and I can't tell whether those things are sort of more disappointing than the good riddances that I hear.
Well, what about the idea that the local daily newspaper, the News Gazette, could sort of pick up the pieces here and help Carl maybe start running some of your stuff?
Yeah. look, I kept offering to defect. You know, I would send letters to the editor of the News Gazette saying, look, I'll write for you, you know, and say, I was perfectly willing to sell out. They never made me an offer. The problem is, it seems to me that already you can see the effect of City View, the Octopus, actually, on the News Gazette. The News Gazette's cultural coverage is so different now from what it was a decade ago. It isn't funny.
Just getting pushed.
I mean, you know, even having a weekly insert, et cetera, and covering art, music, theater, and so forth in ways that it did not before the.
So this is real competition. Existed. I mean, absolutely. the good effects you get from genuine competition.
No question.
Well, the buzz also.
Absolutely.
I think came in direct response
That's
to the Octopus.
That's the Daily Illini's additional insert. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phone lines. We have a caller on. The lines just keep filling up. It's like Kudzu today. I mean, this is a sign that we need this paper, yes, obviously. I mean, the fact that, you know, if the phone lines have been empty, I think it's a sign that we don't. But clearly the listeners are speaking. Line one or Banna, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to thank the staff of the Octopus, the City View, for allowing a broader perspective in our community that's sorely needed. They took articles and letters that and perspectives that even WILL would not air, no less the News Gazette, and we're all in great debt to them, so I applaud all that they've done for the community. I'd like to say to Carl Hospital and Provena and to all the automotive dealers and everyone else who continues to take from the community, that they have sorely let down the community by the lack of their support for an alternative newspaper here. And to them I say...
Now, I don't know if the FCC lets us do that,
but it's,
that's where it came from. Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to our final caller today, today's show. Line two, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if you could give me your comments about whether you feel Saga bought CityView just for its advertising comments or advertising contacts, and whether those contacts would now be immediately transferred to the radio stations owned by the Illini Media Group.
Okay. Mike Nezovich, do you want to field that one?
When they bought it, you would not have bought it for the advertising contacts. And,
yeah, it certainly wouldn't have been my impression.
No, it was better, and I should say that we did finally find a good, really professional salesperson, and that's part of the reason the prospects were going up, and it was, unfortunately, there was just one of her. Mm-hmm. But and by the time, I don't think that was part of the mix, to be honest.
You know, I hear the band in the background warming up, which means they want to push me out of the studio so Garrison Keillor can get in here. And I just want to thank my guests today very much for joining me to talk about the much lamented already CU City View, and the sincere hope we can get something like that, if not the CU City View itself, back in this community as soon as possible. Jenny Thought Southland, the arts and entertainment editor and unofficial historian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mike Nezovich, senior editor at CU City View, who I think is still hard at work trying to resurrect this project, so be in touch with him or with Jenny if that interests you. Thank you for coming. And Carl Esterbrook, who's been on the show before, and I think we'll be honored again. Thank you for coming in as well.
A pleasure, Bob.
Thanks. My privilege.
All right. And I'm Bob McChesney. I'm your host of Media Matters. I want to thank Ben Scott for putting the show together. And I'll be back 1 week from today when we'll be talking with Norman Solomon about the prospective war in Iraq and his recent visit there. Thank you very much.